This is ESPN Radio.
This is the same team that beat the Kansas City Chiefs, so nobody questions if they can put points up on the board.
I felt like I died and woke up and died again, and I was like a cat. I had multiple lives tonight.
Coach trusted us and put it in our hands at the end, because it always feels good to win that way, especially when you almost gave it away.
That's saying something. That's an impressive victory, and like they say here, just win, baby.
John Gruden and the Raiders might feel like they have nine lives before the walking wounded Baltimore Ravens on the other side. I don't know if Tuesday morning is hitting quite the same. Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests join us on the Goodyear Hotline, Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. We'll talk to DeSean Jackson of the Los Angeles Rams in about 10 minutes here. He's got a new podcast coming out. He's playing a new city and a new quarterback who can get that ball all the way down the field to where he is. But Chris, we just heard John Gruden talking about the many lives that he's got there. I felt bad last night because I know you're rooting for the Baltimore Ravens, but a team that came into Monday Night Football beat up as all hell, walked out of it probably in an even worse state last. I mean, is Marlon Humphrey the only defensive back still upright and able for the Baltimore Ravens at this point? Because it sure felt like it.
Well, it sounds like it, because the Baltimore Ravens are bringing in Darrell Worley and Buster Screen and trying to get these guys work out, see if they've got anything left in the tank. So when you've got to resort to trying to sign one of those guys, that just lets you know the state of affairs, and it's not good with that Baltimore Ravens secondary. But I felt like the problem for the Ravens defense got worse with their defensive coordinator, my guy, Wink Martindale, continuing to put those guys in man coverage situations, whether it was cover one, cover zero. It feels like they were majoring that in the fourth quarter, and Derek Carr just kept picking them apart drive by drive. I mean, you're talking about him having three game-tying drives down the stretch, and I just couldn't figure out why Wink Martindale was leaving those guys on the back end out to dry. I get it. They wanted to find a way to be able to put some pressure on Carr. That was something that they struggled with all night long, but they sold out the guys on the back end, and I think that's something that they've got to revisit. That's been a part of their identity defensively for so many years now. But when you don't have the guys on the back end that can hold up in one-on-one coverage, you can't scheme up pressure by sending more in the rush. Just can't happen. I felt like that was a part of the demise of the Baltimore Ravens.
Yeah, Chris, we talked about this on both sides of the ball. There were clear adjustments that the Ravens did not make. On offense, their tackles were getting beat all night long by the Ravens, or excuse me, by the Vegas Raiders pass rushers there. Yannick Ngakoue, Max Crosby were living in the backfield harassing Lamar Jackson, and they didn't send those guys help. You mentioned, though, Wink Martindale, guy who you know well and a guy who's got a very clear MO. Like, what's that conversation like mid-game, halfway through this game, when you're continually getting burned on the back end in these critical moments here? Like, is that something where we got to hear more from these players, or we will hear more from these players?
No, I don't think that's something that they'll air out in the media. They're not gonna put that out there for public consumption, but it's certainly something to keep an eye on. Let's remember that they got Pat Mahomes and company coming to town on Sunday night, and they've got to get that act cleaned up in a hurry, because you know that those guys are capable of turning that game into a track meet. So defensively, they've got to go back to the drawing board and figure out the best way to be able to slow down these high-powered passing attacks, because if you struggle like that against Derek Carr, I'm scared to see what Pat Mahomes and Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce are capable of doing when they get to M&T Bank Stadium. But in looking at what the Baltimore Ravens did last night, I just felt like offensively they should have done more to try to protect Lamar Jackson. We had heard all offseason long about how Greg Roman, their offensive coordinator, wanted to put him under center more, wanted to make sure that they could utilize the play action, being able to have Lamar turn his back to the defense, hide the ball, and put stress on the second and third levels of defenses. And all of that stuff lasted all of one series. They got away from it after the first series, and it was kind of crazy because you saw Lamar actually have that quarterback scramble for 21 yards in the first down off of a similar type of action. So to me, the fact that they didn't stay with that more, I feel like that's an indictment on the coaching staff and another one of those things from last night's game that John Harbaugh has to reexamine.
Speaking of the coaching staff, John Harbaugh, the Ravens head coach, took to the podium and talked about his team's performance after the game.
Very, very happy with the team's effort. I mean, you know, the toughness, the resiliency, and you fight back. Even there at the end, I think the example is the goal line stand. I mean, those are the kind of things that that make us who we are as a team. We just didn't close the game out when we had the opportunity to do it three or four times. And, you know, that's what you need to do. When you have an opportunity to win, you got to go win it. And we just didn't do that tonight.
Yeah, I mean, effort's great. Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty, but at the end of the day, this has got to be about way more execution. We talked to Ryan Clark earlier, and he brought up, have we seen on adjustment period from Greg Roman in the last 3 years? That was the biggest criticism of this Ravens offense coming off last season. And Chris, I know David Culley, the former passing game coordinator, now resides in Houston, but it doesn't seem like we've seen enough growth, especially for the first rattle out of the box in primetime where you really have an opportunity to make a statement.
Yeah, Mike, but it shouldn't have taken long for Greg Roman to figure out that his tackles couldn't hold up in protection, right? Like, that shouldn't have taken long. I mean, we saw Max Crosby on the first couple of series of the game affecting the passer. We know that Alejandro Villanueva might be past it a little bit, but yet Greg Roman insisted on continuing to open up the set, being able to put those tight ends out, space those guys out wide, and not really have any help for those offensive tackles in straight drop-back protection. And that front four from the Vegas Raiders just took full advantage of it. I mean, you mentioned it. Those guys were living in the backfield. They might as well would have been paying rent to the Baltimore Ravens as much as they were in the backfield last night. And Villanueva, he allowed 2 sacks, 6 hurries, and 10 pressures. And Ronnie Stanley, their all-world tackle, wasn't all-world last night. I mean, he allowed 7 hurries and 7 pressures. Now, I get it. He's coming off of the leg injury from last year. But that's even more reason for Greg Roman to try to give that guy a little bit of help early on in the season. So, to me, that's the part of the game plan that was inexcusable. Not being able to get protection for your offensive line, being able to have tight ends and running backs in the protection, having those guys chipped when it became apparent early on that that group needed that help.
Now, Chris, on the other side of this, we got the Las Vegas Raiders, and they get a win that felt really improbable for a lot of that first half. Derek Carr was basically only throwing to Darren Waller. He was airmailing a lot of balls. It felt weird. We had like the worst body language on earth on the sideline from dude, too. It's always felt like a weird tension there with Carr and this organization, but they get a big-time win last night. This is probably still going to be like, this felt like two flawed football teams, Chris, that we saw out there, because they're still in the basement of the AFC West, and that has a lot more to do with the rest of the teams in it than it does with them.
Yeah, no question about it. I mean, that hasn't changed based on last night's performance from the Raiders for me. I still think they're the fourth team in their division behind the Broncos, the Chargers, and of course the Kansas City Chiefs. But the one thing I will say is Derek Carr keeps answering the bell when it comes to whether or not he's their answer at quarterback long term. I know John Gruden always has eyes for the next best quarterback, but I mean, Derek Carr, after that first quarter, made a pretty compelling case. I mean, in the second half in overtime, Derek Carr was 22 of 31, 308 yards, 2 touchdowns, 1 interception, and a 110 passer rating. Like, that's pretty damn good out the gate. So, I mean, if he's capable of being able to have that level of production, I mean, that's going to put your team in a pretty good spot where they can compete on most Sundays. So, it remains to be seen whether or not they're going to be able to establish much of a ground game throughout the year. You know I'm a big believer in offenses being able to have balance. But if Derek Carr and that Raiders offense can do what they did and then give that defense time to kind of grow up under Gus Bradley's tutelage, then I feel like the Raiders will have a chance to be in the conversation for playoffs once the season gets to December.
Yeah, you mentioned the running game there. Josh Jacobs was walking very gingerly for a lot of that night. We know he still gutted it out and was able to help them out a bunch, but they're going to need to make sure that guy gets healthy in particular if this season's going to resemble anything the Raiders want it to in a pretty pivotal year for, I'm sure, you know, I mean, not John Gruden because we know he's paid forever, but
yep,
maybe Mike Mayock and some of the other people that are helping buy the pieces around here. By the way, as the NFL season gets underway, make sure you're ready for kickoff with TuneIn, the app that lets you listen to live games, in-depth analysis, and tailored content for your team all season long. Plus, with ESPN Radio on TuneIn, you can listen to comprehensive football coverage from NFL Live, the Fantasy Focus Football Podcast, and more, all to fuel your football fandom. Download the TuneIn app today and start listening everywhere you go. Coming up next, though, we'll head out to the West Coast and find out how DeSean Jackson likes his shiny new quarterback next on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Ian Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr., Chris Canty. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. We got the bottom five things from the NFL this weekend coming up in about 10 minutes. Chris Canty's got you on lockdown.
Oh, yeah.
list here. He's excited about it, too.
No question about it. It's a bulletproof list, by the way. I don't even know how you can debate any of the things that are on this list. These are the worst things that happened in week one around the National Football League. No question about it.
Well, we had some very, very interesting ones to choose from. So, again, Chris guaranteeing an airtight list right now. We're looking forward to that, but nowhere near the bottom. Let's head back to one of the top things we saw from the NFL's opening weekend, and that was the Los Angeles Rams. A lot of new faces out in that organization producing big time early on, and one of them joins us now here, Rams wide receiver DeSean Jackson with us on the Goodyear Hotline. Now, DeSean, I was a big fan of the Philadelphia Eagles when you were around there, and Chris Canty was on the receiving end of one of your better career moments. So, Chris, I'm hoping we can be amicable during this interview, all right?
No, we're going to have to be. D-Jax, I hate that you had to do it to me, man. Week 15 back in 2010, Miracle at the Meadowlands, too. I really hope that Mike Golic Jr. didn't bring that up. I was going to be preemptive about trying to get that out the way and telling you we didn't have to revisit that moment.
Hey, man, that was a special moment in my career, man. How y'all doing, man? I appreciate y'all having me on.
We're doing well. And listen, a career full of special moments for you now makes its way out to Los Angeles. You're with the Rams and with one of the quarterbacks that was a huge headline this offseason. So through this offseason and now through week one, what's the experience been like out there for you and with your new quarterback, Matthew Stafford?
Oh, man, it's been a blast for me, honestly, man. First time in my career being able to stay home. You know, usually when it's time for training camp, I'm always going to the East Coast or somewhere far from home. So for me, this time around, it was special. A lot of family, friends was able to kind of, you know, witness, you know, me being here, training camp, you know, and visiting. But at the same time, you know, for me, it's more business. You know, being back here, you know, obviously born and raised in California, it's not, you know, a party scene for me. I'm trying to be focused. And like you say, I know we have something special here with being a part of the Los Angeles Rams and just their success over the past few years. So, I mean, Stafford, man, he's a beast, man. As you can see, his first game out there, man, it's the honor to be, you know, a part of a team with a quarterback like that. So I'm looking forward to a great year with it.
D-Jax, you've been around the league for a while now, and before we start breaking down the X's and O's, I want you to take us into what that environment at SoFi Stadium was like on Sunday night, the first time with fans in that building. What did it feel like when you guys stepped on the field?
Oh, man, it was delightful, man. This preseason, we had a few fans in there, but obviously the first regular season game where they allow fans at SoFi Stadium, like, man, that stadium right there, man, is one of the best I done ever played in. You know, I used to always say the Dallas Cowboys, you know, Jerry's World was up there. But now I think – I haven't seen the Las Vegas stadium yet, but as far as this SoFi stadium, I think that it tops everything, man. So, you know, the fans came. They came to part. They was loud, man. They gave us energy. The defense fed off of it. I'm looking forward to that crowd all year this year, man. So it's exciting sight, and hopefully that can help us win a lot of games.
DeSean Jackson with us here on the Goodyear Hotline, Los Angeles Rams wide receiver. And DeSean, you played for a lot of quality coaches as you've been in the league, been in some great spots here. Sitting here now, Sean McVay, you've probably heard a lot of him on the outside looking in, but what's he been like in the building? What separates him from other coaches around the league in your mind?
Oh, man, for me, I mean, this is my second stint with Coach McVay. You know, first off, when I was in Washington, you know, it was his characteristics. You know, he was an offensive coordinator, but he was always able to lead the room, you know, when he did offensive install. And, you know, you could tell guys would just follow his lead. You know, his demeanor, his smartness. I mean, he knows the game, his X's and O's, you know, how he's able to game plan for defenses. So, you know, this time around, you know, I kind of give him a hard time always because I'm like, now you the man, you know, this your show now. So he's like, yeah, you know, can you tell? I'm like, yeah, I can tell. So, you know, I always give him a hard time. But, I mean, he's doing a great job, man. He's had a lot of success. And, you know, from now to then, I mean, you could tell his growth and, you know, just his expertise as far as, you know, his leverage as far as, you know, scheme and plays. Man, that's the thing. He puts players in mismatch opportunities so the defense can't, you know, key in on them. So, you know, as you see with Cooper Kupp, Robert Woods, you know, Van Jefferson, I mean, we got a lot of weapons, man. So I'm looking forward to seeing every game, every week is going to be different. You know, some guys might shine one week and that next might be the next week. So we're going to have a good one, though.
D-Jax, you mentioned how turned up your defense was Sunday night against the Bears. What's it been like watching two of arguably the best defensive players in all of football go to work in Aaron Donald and Jalen Ramsey? What's it been like seeing those guys up close?
Man, they special, man. They're special duo. You know, I've been, you know, some great players, obviously, man. Fletcher Cox, been like with Asante, been with a lot of, you know, Nasi Asawa, been with a lot of great, you know, cornerbacks and players. But, I mean, these two, man, at the top of their game, really top 15, top 20 players in the NFL year in and year out. I mean, them dudes, Aaron Donald is hands down one of the best defensive tackles to ever play this game. Jalen Ramsey, you know, he's making his argument to be, you know, top corner in the league too. So you can just see their hard work, their dedication, their leadership, you know, their enthusiasm that they bring on the field, and they just make guys around them better. You know, so for me, being on a team where you got two dudes like that, I mean, I love them being on my team. I'd rather be on their side of the ball than the opposite of them.
And the true words never spoken right there. Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty talking to Rams wide receiver DeSean Jackson on the Goodyear Hotline. Now, DeSean, you mentioned being back home, being a part of this team here. You're also venturing into the podcast space. You're getting into the content business now. So what was the inspiration there for you? Why did you want to suddenly get your voice out there in this way?
Well, honestly, man, last year kind of started. I had got injured last year when I was in Philadelphia, and I was, you know, kind of had a lot of time on my hands, and I was just sitting back. You know, I always had a camera on my face. You know, my brother's been filming me, have my own documentary. And, you know, for me, it was just like, man, let me kind of get into something that I'm used to, you know, where, you know, talking to guests, having guests come on and kind of really just, you know, bring my perspective, you know, from intersecting like sports to culture to the community to, you know, music and, you know, for myself. It's just really having people that I really know, just like a conversation, you know, we're just kind of giving the viewer the, you know, the real authentic of, you know, how people come from where we come from, how we stay authentic to who we are and, you know, obstacles we had to face, you know, from being young into NFL or, you know, other people probably being into the music. And so it just kind of gives a different perspective. But, yeah, that's kind of how I came and started. And, you know, doing it, I dropped my first one today, so it's going to be every Tuesday. You know, Apple on iTunes and Spotify and all that good stuff. So just having a little fun with it.
There we go. Fade the Booth, by the way, is the podcast that you can check out with DeSean Jackson. Make sure you go and download that wherever you get it. You mentioned, I mean, what you've overcome, what you've done to get here. I mean, this is what, the start of year 14 now for you in the NFL. Is that right?
Yeah, year 14 for sure.
I mean, as you look back on that career now, as you look back on year 14, I mean, would you have been able to tell the you in college, the you growing up, that you'd be a 14-year veteran in the NFL?
Man, I honestly had a lot of faith in myself. You know, people surrounding me had a lot of faith in me. My parents, you know, kind of built a foundation around me to help, you know, be the best I can be. So for me, I kind of always knew I was going to be special. You know, I put in a lot of hard work and, you know, I never really said, you know, I'm going to play 15, 20 years or whatever that number is going to end up being. But, you know, I definitely, you know, had a lot of faith in myself. I know the people around me had a lot of faith. So, you know, for me, just year in and year out, just being consistent, you know, just kind of being the best I can be every time I step on the field is kind of where it's led me to now. But, you know, a lot of people don't really realize the hard work that's been put into it. They just like, you know, just see the accolades and, you know, all the awards. It's like it's been a lot of hard work put in behind closed doors.
Well, again, if you want to check out more and hear more about that journey, again, DeSean Jackson got the podcast dropping very soon, dropping today, actually. You can check out Fade the Booth. DeSean, we appreciate you giving us some time today, man. Best of luck with the podcast, with the rest of the season, and hopefully we'll get a chance to talk to you again down the line.
Yes, sir. Appreciate it, man. Y'all have a good one.
Awesome stuff there. Rams wide receiver DeSean Jackson with
still
us on
fast,
the Goodyear
Mike.
Hotline.
Still fast in year 14. I don't know how this guy does it, but he's still down there toasting DBs. It's unbelievable, man.
You know what? Him and then I know he just recently retired, I believe. Him and Ted Ginn Jr., they always say the speed is the first thing to go. It is never gone for either of those two. I don't understand what they're doing, what they're eating, but I need to have more of what they've got because I almost threw my back out picking up trash today.
Those dudes are unbelievable, man. I still don't know how DeSean Jackson is out there doing what he's doing, man. And you saw he's going to be a big part of this Rams offense this season. Like, they didn't sign him just to be some veteran presence. Sean McVay and Matt Stafford are going to put that dude to work.
Yeah, they signed him to go out there and test every bit of that arm strength from Matt Stafford and see how far he can chuck that thing down the field. So we'll continue to get answers on how that offense evolves with those two. But coming up next, it's time to head to the gutter. It's the NFL Bottom Five from Chris Canty next on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. About 10 minutes. Apparently, we've got beef. I didn't know this, but apparently Bart and Hahn are out in these streets talking smack. That's what I've heard.
Yeah, and it's more Bart than Hahn. You know how that show gets down. But just know that I, as your new teammate, tried to come to your defense when Bart Scott aptly tried to give you a new nickname. I'm just putting that out there. I don't want to give away too much because we're going to get to it at the end of the hour. But I'm just saying there were words had about Bart Scott trying to take shots at my guy.
All right. We'll have to hear Bart out on this one here right now. I know there are teammates in the lineup and that stuff. We'll get to it when we get to it around here. Ring the damn bell. But you know what I was also just thinking about here? Because I have seen now every Met Gala outfit about 100 times over, including Kim Kardashian, as everyone is pointing out, looking like the locked video game character on a fighting game. Chris, when you were in, like, when you've been in New York, did you ever make it to the Met Gala?
Nah, I didn't have enough cachet to be at the Met Gala. That was reserved for guys like Victor Cruz and Justin Tuck and that crew. I never had the cachet to be able to walk up in there with the Met Gala. Plus, I don't know if I necessarily would have been comfortable with that crowd. That might not just be my speed. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, well, and it's tough, too. I mean, being a bigger guy, the amount of clothing, because, like, all that designer stuff is built for people that are built like coat hangers, and that's not us.
No, not at all. I mean, we're holding it down for the 300-pounders. Met Gala, not so much. You want to find great restaurants in town? Come holla at us. We got you.
If they make the Met Gala buffet, we will be in business. That would be in the top five of things we would see from any weekend. But we have already given you the top five from the NFL weekend. We have now got to, on Tuesday, as we will every Tuesday, give you the bottom five from Chris Canty. Cliff, let's get it going.
Let's go, MTJ. Let's go. Okay, so I hate to do it, but I got to start out with my New York football Giants. Their offense was absolutely abysmal. 31st in the NFL last year. They invested heavily this offseason on that side of the ball. Dave Gettleman doled out nearly $100 million in contracts to Kenny Golladay, Kyle Rudolph, and Devontae Booker. And then they drafted Kadarius Toney in the first round. And on Sunday, against the Denver Broncos defense, without Brad Chubb, amounted to 171 yards of total offense and 7 points through three quarters. I'm sorry, New York Giants. I got to put you as the fifth worst thing I saw in the NFL this weekend. Let's go to number four.
Number four.
The Atlanta Falcons. I got to do it to the Dirty Birds because the Philadelphia Eagles defense did y'all dirty. All of a sudden, we're supposed to have this debut from offensive guru Arthur Smith as their head coach. Team decided to run it back with Matt Ryan, drafted a tight end fourth overall, and managed a whopping 260 yards, a total offense in the whole game. And that was the definition of the mediocre, the defense that they were going up against a year ago. I'm sorry, Atlanta Falcons. Your offense was awful. After the first quarter, they didn't pass midfield. Matt Ryan only averaged 4.8 yards per attempt, and the team only scored 6 points as a home favorite against the team that won four games last season. I don't know when the last time we saw a team not turn the ball over at home as a home favorite and lose by 26 points. Hadn't seen it in a really long time, if it's ever happened. Resetting right here, we're on with Canty and Golic Jr., and I'm giving you my five worst things, my bottom five things that I saw in the NFL in week one. Let's go to number three.
Number three.
Jamie Gillen, punter from the Cleveland Browns. I know we've heard it before, but I got to say it again. You had one job. You had one job, and you botched it. Key situation, your team leading in the fourth quarter on the road against a team that bounced you in the playoffs a year ago. You got to flip the field for your defense, and instead he panics after a perfect snap, drops the ball, picks it up, tries to run for the first down, and ends up gifting Pat Mahomes and the Chiefs the ball at the 15-yard line. Three plays later, Travis Kelce from Pat Mahomes, touchdown, Chiefs go ahead, and the Browns can't catch up. I'm sorry, I usually don't want to blame one guy for a loss, but I got to do it in this instance, especially when it comes down to a kicker or a punter. Punters aren't football players. Kickers aren't football players. So I'm going to go ahead and say it. Jamie Gillen, you cost the Cleveland Browns a chance to pull off the upset in week one in Arrowhead. Let's go to number two.
Number two.
Okay. The absolute worst is not only getting whooped in the game on Sunday, but then going to social media and telling everybody you got whooped. Taylor Lewan, what are you doing? Titans offensive line, what are you doing? You got your quarterback running for his life. You gave up 6 sacks and 9 quarterback hits, 11 total pressures. Taylor Lewan was responsible for 2 of them, but Nate Davis, Roger Saffo, Ben Jones, and Kendall Lamb all gave up sacks. They were just giving it up to the Cardinals defense. No slouch with that defensive front, but still, you got to find a way to be able to protect your quarterback. That job, that performance, just ain't going to get it done. And then to make all of this worse, giving Chan Jones a shout-out for exposing you on national television, come on, Taylor Lewan. Come on, Tennessee Titans. Y'all need to do better. And speaking of better, this is actually a lot better in the case of this list because it's the bottom 5, and this is the number 1 worst thing that I saw this weekend in the National Football League. That is the Green Bay Packers.
That's number 1.
No player, not just one phase, the whole damn team. I don't know how you come out in week 1 and you don't have energy to play, but that was Aaron Rodgers' excuse in the post-game interview. I just don't understand it. They were outplayed in every single phase of the game against the Saints on Sunday. Aaron Rodgers stunk up the joint, had a couple of costly turnovers coming out of halftime, and the Saints offense rushed for 39 attempts for a buck 80. Packers D, they couldn't stop a nosebleed on that game. They had a takeaway nullified by a roughing the passer call, but overall, just an embarrassing performance. I don't even know how you explain it. I know Aaron Rodgers is going to be telling everybody they need to R-E-L-A-X, relax ahead of this game that you got against the Detroit Lions on Monday night. But let me tell you like this. Green Bay Packers fans, y'all need to panic because there's something wrong with the Packers, and it might have something to do with all the drama this past offseason. That's it. That's my bottom 5. Mike, I told you it was bulletproof. I usually underpromise and overdeliver, but I felt so confident in my list, I wanted to go ahead and make that claim before I even get started. How'd I do, partner?
Man, listen, you lobbed that off the backboard yourself, to yourself, in the middle of a game and put that thing home here. I got to say, Chris, too, the crown jewel of all of this for me was in the middle of talking about James Gillen and the horrible mistake he made in that Browns-Chiefs game, saying, I don't usually like to blame one player, and then proceeding to name Taylor Lewan in the very next spot. It was very, very Rick James. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, grind my feet on Eddie Murphy's couch. Got a little more sense than that. Incredible. That is how you do a list right there.
Well, listen, there might be a little hate in my heart because, you know, Taylor Lewan is an offensive lineman. I'm a defensive lineman, so I'm looking for any opportunity to take a shot at that guy. Why not?
Listen, understandable. That's what the bottom 5 list is for. And again, we'll do this every Tuesday coming off the NFL weekend, the top 5, bottom 5 list from the NFL weekend that was. But coming up next, beef is not what Jay said to Nas. Beef is apparently what Bart and Han had to say earlier about me on their show. We'll get to that next here, Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio. Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty, and thanks to the guests that joined us today, Bomani Jones, co-host, it's The Right Time with Bomani Jones. It's literally his podcast. You can check it out wherever you get your podcast. He joined us to break down what the hell we do with USC now that Clay Helton is out of the paint there. Ryan Clark, our ESPN NFL analyst, joined us to issue an apology to Keenan Allen for this offseason. And DeSean Jackson, wide receiver for the Los Angeles Rams, stopped by to promote his podcast, talk about playing with Matthew Stafford and a couple of all-time greats on defense. If you missed any of that, download, subscribe, rate, and review the Canty and Golic Jr. podcast wherever you get your podcast. But we got to keep that same energy now because we got some beef to get to around here. So, Cliff, hit the music for me here. Because before we get to this beef, we also had Chris Canty's former teammate Eli Manning and his brother Peyton in the booth on the sidecast on ESPN2 last night. The Manning cast went down. And so let's give a clip of this. Eli Manning, Peyton Manning, and their time with Ray Lewis on the broadcast, one of their guests, and see what grade Chris Canty gives his former teammate.
I love to talk about that game when Ray Lewis was actually dictating who you should make the Mike linebacker. Ray, I know you remember that.
Hey, what's up, man?
Ray, you know, I remember that. My rookie year, one of my maybe my third start We're playing y'all, and y'all are good. I mean, it's Ed Reed, and it's you, and it's, I mean, y'all are loaded. Y'all are so good. And we used to have to call the mic, and I'm getting there. I'm saying, hey, number 52 is the mic. 52 is the mic. And you're going, no, I'm not the mic. He's the mic. I'm like, yeah, Ray's right. That guy's, the other guy's the mic. And Ray, I mean, I think, you know, everybody's in there. Ed Reed's like, hey, I want to be the mic. I'm like, yeah, anybody can be the mic. I'm fine.
Just so you know, folks, it's not normal for the middle linebacker for the other team to make the mic linebacker and declare the protection. That's not normal. But when Eli was a rookie quarterback, Ray Lewis is on defense. Eli, please tell us what your quarterback rating was that game.
A 0.0. 0.0. It's hard to do.
Two is the pass protection. The Lions got the four down and the Will linebacker. Derek can new mic it to this linebacker to get him blocked. All go is the route. Everybody's going deep. Switch tells the U and the Y to switch release. Okay, and then we're tagging X on the under. Look at all the verbiage, Eli, before they actually get to the play. Heavy right bunch, Velcro, H flick. All that is not even a play. It's just shifts and motions.
Chris, how are they going to do your guy Eli like that, man? I felt like it was a roast for him.
Yeah, they did him dirty on that one, but the Ravens defense did him even worse during his rookie year. Yeah, that's one of those tapes that Eli Manning wished he could go back and burn. That's how bad it was down there in Baltimore. But overall, man, I got to give Eli a solid B+. Him and Peyton did their thing on the broadcast last night. I was able to watch a lot of it during the course of the game. I really locked into it on the first quarter. I thought Peyton was hilarious with the John Gruden skit, putting on the hat and the headset. But overall, for my former teammate, I got to give it a solid B+. I think it's a great alternative to the normal Monday night crew.
Yeah, it was a cool thing out there. Obviously, the guys in the Monday night crew, Steve Levy, Brian Greasy, Lou Riddick, and that whole group, Lisa Salter's on the sideline for a decade now on Monday Night Football. But man, that side cast, Mina Kimes and the NFL Live crew, along with the guys out in Vegas, it was a good time. It was a really cool, big way to start off the NFL season on Monday Night Football. So we'll get plenty more of that from Peyton and Eli on here. And as we said, Eli's got to come do the home game here with us on Chris Canty's show before Chris will agree to be a guest on Monday Night Football with him. We got the rules down.
No question about it. We got to make that happen.
All right, here, Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio. Let's get to this. So Chris Canty was on with Alan Hahn and Bart Scott on Bart and Hahn, which you can catch on ESPN Radio in the early afternoons here. And apparently Bart had some thoughts about me. Let's see what he had to say.
If you ever need somebody to step in, you need me on the show, just go ahead and holler at your boy, even though Golic Jr. looks like Bull with a
what
facial
doing?
Hair.
Come on, man. I can't have you taking shots at my new partner like that now.
You know,
come on, man.
You just put him in that. You know, people record this. They're going to play this now. If Chris laughed, how uncomfortable is that to start out?
You see that, Al? He's trying to set me up for failure, man. I thought Bart was supposed to be my guy, man. My brother.
So, to be clear, he was attacking me for being a beautiful bald man with great facial hair? Is that how we're going here?
It sounded kind of like that. That's the direction that he was going with it. Now, you heard me. I was not having none of that. I wasn't here for any of the Mike Golic Jr. slander. Just so we're clear on this one, I wasn't laughing with them. I'm really laughing at them because I know that you're going to flame Bart Scott the first time you get a chance to.
Oh, yeah, listen, I mean, it's fine. Like, a good-natured ribbing amongst the radio lineup here. We're here to be great teammates for each other. I don't want to say anything wild to Bart, but if he needs any help learning how to get through those ad reads, tell him I'm here for him, and I'll gladly help give him a few lessons on that.
Well, listen, the other thing that you could do is just show him my Super Bowl 46 ring.
Ooh.
I'm just saying, we had to go through the New York Jets in 2011 in order to make that happen. They actually got the 6-game winning streak started. It was him and Rex Ryan. So if we want to start talking about the Organized Chaos podcast and start some show beef there, we can do that too.
And he got no neck.
Damn, these audio hands work. Best believe I am about to hide behind the accomplishments of Chris Canty, proudly hold up his Super Bowl ring, and say, come and get us, Bart and Hahn, even though Alan Hahn technically didn't do anything in this situation. But you just got clapped up, both y'all.
Oh, yeah, we know we got to give Alan Hahn some, too. We can't just let him be a fan for free. He can't laugh for free in this whole thing.
No, not a chance. You guys rep the same smart tech over there, which means you guys both just got caught up in this right now. So, you know what? This is good. We're getting ready to go for the fall. We got a long, long season coming up here, And I got a feeling we'll be seeing plenty of Bart and Han soon. We'll see if they have the nerve to show up here in the hallways in Bristol.
Yeah, they don't want that smoke.
We'll see if Spain and Fitz want that smoke next.
Can't wait.